We'll be discussing the verses from Canto 3, chapter 10, and then finishing the chapter. The title of the chapter is Divisions of Creation, so it's a little technical. They have to pay attention, but I'll try to make it like simple. There will be some of the technical. The scene is somewhere in the Himalayas where Maitreya has gone after hearing Buddha Bhagita from Krishna with the instruction from Krishna to impart what he's heard to Vidura, who will be coming soon. Krishna knew that Vidura would be coming. And we know from the first canto of Bhagavatam that Vidura went on pilgrimage before the Kurukshetra battle because he was insulted by Duryodhana. He just left the royal palace and went on pilgrimage for purification. Specifically, Prabhupada comments that he was so close to Krishna, Vidura, that he could have just gone to Krishna. But he didn't feel himself qualified to just go to Krishna because he had been in this contaminating association of Duryodhana and company. So he wanted to purify himself so we could be fit to be in Krishna's presence. So he went on pilgrimage and heard from saintly persons in the course of his travels. And what we're hearing this morning is part of what Sutta Goswami says he heard from Maitreya to his full satisfaction, and he became fully enlightened. So this is what he heard before he went back and delivered Dhritarashtra. He left a greatly respected, learned, wise personality amongst the royal assembly. He came back, Uttama Adhikari, perfected soul. And this is like the culmination of that, because purification and then hearing from Maitreya. He became fully enlightened. There's a difference between jnana and vijnana, or theoretical knowledge and practical realization. So, trying to put the what we're going to be hearing in a context. The subject matter, in general, is creation. It's not like Vidura just wants some textbook information. He's learned it. He has the textbook information. He wants the realizations of Maitreya to be imparted into his heart. Just like the Jnaninas tattva darshanaha, that the learned person can impart knowledge. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto one who has qualifications, and he exhibited those qualifications. Maitreya was very enlivened and imparted realization on the topic of creation. So, one other little message that's like the context or the background. And why is this important, the particular subject matter of creation? And borrowing from Sariputta's introduction to Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, he says one little phrase that very powerful. The way that one views the world has a significant impact on how one views oneself. Or expand it a little bit, and what's the nature of Maya? if we want to enter into the spiritual reality, it really helps. It's not quintessential, but it really helps to know what the nature of Maya is. Sentiment is not sufficient. Knowledge is not sufficient. Realization is essential. And what's the reality? What's the absolute truth? So, the Bhagavatam, the subject matter of the Bhagavatam, is the absolute truth. Janma yasya yataha. Everything comes from the absolute truth. That which from which everything else comes is the absolute truth. So this is, the focus is on Krishna. He's the absolute truth, and from him comes creation. So it's not a technology question, how does he do it? It's a glorification of him. So the dialogue between Maitreya, just previous, and Vidura is about Lord Brahma, because he's asked about creation, so he speaks about Lord Brahma and Lord Brahma's prayers to the Supreme Lord, who's the primary creator, and Brahma is the secondary creator. So there are these two terms we discussed yesterday. Sarga, that's the primary creation. Visarga, secondary creation. I mean, that alone is... Where does one understand that in theology besides Vedic wisdom? Just a little sidebar is... There are devotees who have been Mormons, like, you know, really grown up and involved in Mormon teachings. They have an idea of becoming the creator when you drill down on the theology. It's, you can become the creator. It's monotheistic. Christianity, you can become the creator. I wonder if their theologians understand the parallels of their theology with Vedic wisdom. The terminology isn't so clear, but you know, they have an idea of reincarnation. You just keep going and going. One of their mistaken notions is you can't go down. You can only keep going up. And the highest position is you become the creator. You know, for people that have an impersonal tendency, that's cool. You can become God. But the distinction between Brahma, the creator, and Vishnu, the primary creator, and even then that Vishnu is an expansion of the original personality of Godhead, that theology is not clear. Anyway, Sarga and Visarga are what the, Sarga is what Lord Vishnu does. Visarga, the secondary creation, is what Brahma does. And the verses that we discussed yesterday morning were in the category of what Vishnu does. And there were six types of creation. And I want to add one more element. Vishnu creates through the agency of time. Brahma creates through the agency of time. You don't have creation, or even broader, you don't have activity without time. Same reverse. Time must be there to have events. And time is, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is, Kalosmi. Time I am. And then the Bhagavatam expands that understanding. It's Kala Shakti. It's his direct expansion in the form of one of his energies, Kala Shakti. So then you keep going, and there's eternal time, and there's past, present, and future time. And they're different. In fact, past, present, and future time is illusory. It's an illusory representation of eternal time. It's like an object in the shadow of the object. In the shadow of an object, there's no substance. Here's a mirror, here's an apple, and here's the reflection of the apple in the mirror. Where's the substance in the reflection? There's no substance. It looks like, but there's no substance. But there is an object. So, same. The Bhagavatam is very succinctly, doesn't expand it, but stating time is eternal. We were discussing yesterday about infinity. Remember that discussion? Infinity. Where does it begin? Where does it end? It doesn't begin, it doesn't end. What's that? What do we know that doesn't begin and doesn't end? We don't have experience of things that don't begin and end. We have experience of things that begin and end. Time is necessary for creation. So Vidura asks, please explain all about time and don't leave anything out. So Maitreya is very pleased by his question and then explains the action of time in creation. And he describes first succinctly that there is relative time, that is how time acts on the beings in the heavenly realm. How time acts on beings in this mortal realm. How time acts on the lower regions. It's different. But in the background is eternal time. And the background of eternal time is Krishna. He's the cause of all causes. And time is a necessary cause for events, for creation. So then, yesterday, we talked about what we heard. There are 9 types of creation and 3 types of destruction. So the 3 types of destruction mentioned were partial. Well, the first one that's mentioned is complete. At the end of the life of Brahma, there's a total destruction. Everything that was in the unmanifest and has become manifest goes back to the unmanifest. Then a second destruction is at the end of Brahma's day. There's a partial annihilation up to the heavenly planets and down. And at the beginning of Brahma's morning, he reconstructs from the heavenly planets down. That's his seva. And then the third is the day-to-day little creations and destructions that go on. Like, you know, what we do every day. Or in our lifetime. Those are the 3 categories of destructions. Then there's 6 categories, and I think I had best read them as a refresher. I'll do it in a broad way first. The first 5, we read 6 yesterday. The first 5 are from Pradhan, remember what Pradhan is? Pradhan is the sum total of material ingredients undifferentiated. Like a big messy warehouse where everything is all mixed up, jumbled. You don't even, can't tell one thing from another thing. So jumbled. Undifferentiated totality of material substance, material energy. And then that differentiates by the glance of Mahavishnu, which carries living entities and time, and things start to separate out. So the first five are the categories of those separations. So I'm going to read what the first five are. Then the sixth is of another category. It's directly the Lord provides avidya shakti, something that's necessary to have material activity along with time, is ignorance. The living entity becomes covered by avidya shakti. That's why it's so difficult to get out of ignorance, because it's the Lord's potency. Who's going to win? You or the Lord's potency? Avidya shakti is going to win. No matter how clever, how whatever, whatever. Unless Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya Mameve Prapadyante. By surrendering unto Krishna, one can easily cross beyond it. See, the Vidya Shakti is for those who are opposed. They have an attitude towards Krishna. So they want separate enjoyment. To have separate enjoyment, which is not possible, you have to be covered by ignorance. So he supplies it. And all the dravya, all the ingredients, all the stuff necessary to try to do it. Try to enjoy separately. Here's the program. Here's the ignorance. Have a party in ignorance. And call it search for happiness. And what you'll find is suffering. But I don't want you to do that, but you want it, so here it is. So he's supplying. It's primary creation from Pradhan and then the Avidya Shakti. So here's the breakdown. At the end, I'm going to summarize. So that's like the overview of what we've done so far. The first of the nine creations, the first one is the creation of the Mahatattva, or the sum total of material ingredients, wherein the modes interact, because there's a period of time when they're dormant. But what happens when modes interact? You get variety. Like Prabhupada's example, 3 times 3 is 9. 9 times 9 is 81. 81 times 81, and this way we get all varieties. Just by 3 mixing. 3 mix when the time energy along with the living entities is injected into Pradhan. That's one type of creation, the Mahatattva, the separated ingredients manifest. In the second, so this is like a breakdown, the false ego is generated as the first element that separates out of Pradhan, in which the material ingredients, dravya, material knowledge, jnana, and material activities, kriya. Dravya, jnana, kriya. Ignorance, goodness, and passion. They're products of those modes. I'm reading text 16 from Canto 3, Chapter 10. Here's the third. The sense perceptions. The Sanskrit word is tanmatra. There's senses, and there's the objects of the senses. Tanmatra is the third creation. And from these, the elements are generated. The fourth creation is creation of knowledge and working capacity. Jnana and the capacity to do work. So, aside from the spirit souls, this is an analysis of, this is Sankhya. Analysis of matter. Categories of matter that the Lord manifests. I mean, I was thinking this morning reading this. We just take so many things for granted. Like, you know, like time. Where does time come from? Even before the elements, where does time come from? And because of time, you have elements. You have knowledge. You have working capacity. Like, you know, I'm independent. It's ridiculous. We're completely dependent. Except for our little tiny free will. We're completely dependent. And a little tiny free can just turn our radar this way or that way. Towards Krishna, away from Krishna. Or degrees of, you know, something towards Krishna and mostly away from Krishna. And then you have all this. But in either case, in the spiritual realm, we're also dependent. But lovingly dependent. And Krishna is lovingly reciprocating. In the material realm, we're falsely independent. So-called independent. And so we're entangled in fruitive activity. But how are you even going to have fruitive activity? Manifestation of the capacity to work. And material intelligence to try to go get that carrot. And the carrot. And then the carrot disappears. And then one feels sorry. And the whole show. You can't have that without Krishna mercifully supplying all this stuff. So this is like anatomy class. There's Maya, and then there's anatomy of Maya. It's like, you know, here's all the little parts of the body of Maya. It's how the body works, how Maya works. Wiggle something over here and something over there wiggles. Some cause and effect. That's what is being described. And so what's the cause of all those other wiggles? Or that then it caused something else to happen and becomes the cause of another effect. Then you have material life. How does creation work? How do we see the unseen hand of Krishna in events or life? So when Vidura goes back and says, Dhritarashtra, wake up. You're at the fag end of life. You're an old man. Your teeth are falling out. You can't digest your food. You're about to expire. And you're attached to this bag, this temporary circumstance. If you die in this condition, what's going to be the outcome? So many sinful activities you've done because of your blindness, not your material blindness, your spiritual blindness, too much attached to your expectation of being the king, and if you can't do it through your sons, and all your sons have been killed because of you. And by the very persons who, by the Lord's arrangement, killed them, you're maintaining your position in their kingdom, thinking, I'm the king. You're a fool. Dhritarashtra, let go. Leave at once. Don't even speak a word to anybody because they won't let you go. Just go. And free yourself from this illusion and all the sinful reactions for all of your misdeeds. Dhritarashtra, go at once. Now he left with insult. Vidura. But, you know, with detachment. And Dhritarashtra is attached. He's helping him. This knowledge, if understood properly, can lead to detachment. Jnana Vairagya. Supposing one doesn't understand all this stuff, it's like, whoa, it's way over here. That's okay. You can go back to Godhead without... But by understanding these things, it takes away the mere sentiment of the notion of God creates things. Because the empiricist, scientist, will say, rubbish. And if we just say, no, the scripture tells me God creates. On what basis? What's the science of how God creates? Here's the science of how God creates. So we may not be a scientist. Maybe just like a simple-hearted devotee, and we like to chant and dance and make garlands and serve the deity and, you know, do devotional service, serve the devotees. But at least in our Vaishnava Sangha, some person should be learned in the scripture. Prabhupada wanted us all to study his Bhaktivedanta purports and clearly understand as best we can, according to our capacity. The goal is to see that Krishna is the cause of all this. So this is, there's the body of Maya, and here's the anatomy class, and we're seeing how the different parts fit together. So he's creating, the fifth creation is creating knowledge, excuse me, the fourth creation. Fifth is the controlling deities by the interaction of the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness generates the demigods. The mode of passion is generating the capacity to work. And next we're going to hear about ignorance. The sixth creation is the ignorant darkness of the living entity, by which the master acts like a fool. And where we ended yesterday was this. Just I'll read the paragraph again. It's really nice. Especially, Prabhupada is pointing to the avidya potency, avidya shakti, the sixth element. Because you can't have the souls acting in material life without ignorance. As Prabhupada concludes, the conditioned souls are not originally fools, but by the influence of the avidya function of material nature, they are made fools. And thus they are unable to utilize knowledge in the proper channel. So now going back up, then there's these dravya, jnana, and kriya. Prabhupada writes, the material nature therefore appears to function in three phases. The creative principle in the material world as ignorance and as knowledge. So the mode of goodness is illuminating. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic culture recommends try to be situated as far as possible in the quality of goodness, because it's illuminating. The predominating deity that's mentioned here, that's the sun, light. And that way the eyes can see and objects can be perceived. And, you know, spiritual reality can at least theoretically be understood. But to the degree that quality of goodness is missing, one becomes very involved in passion, very industriously chasing after the carrot, trying to accumulate things and be the enjoyer of those things and getting power and stuff, and ignorance further brings the covering of the soul. And we're going to hear then that's Those three principles are principles that are handed over to Brahma out of these six kinds of primary creations of the Lord. And then, text number 18 comes what Brahma does, the secondary creation, or Visarga. All the above are natural creations by the external energy of the Lord. Now, hear from me about the creations of by Brahma, who, as an incarnation of the mode of passion, and who, in the matter of creation, has a brain like that of the personality of Godhead. The seventh creation, so there's 7, 8, and 9. Seventh creation is that of the immovable entities, plants, which are of six kinds. The fruit trees without flowers. Trees and plants which exist until the fruit is ripe. Creepers. Pipe plants. Creepers which have no support. And trees with flowers and fruits. All the immovable trees and plants seek their subsistence upwards. They are almost unconscious, but have feelings of pain within. They are manifested in variegatedness. That's number 7 amongst the creations, the non-moving living entities. 8. The 8th creation is that of the lower species of life, and they are of different varieties, numbering 28. They are all extensively foolish and ignorant. They know their desirables by smell, but are unable to remember anything within the heart. Purport. In the Vedas, the symptoms of the lower animals are described as follows, and he gives the Sanskrit, then the translation. Quote, lower animals have knowledge only of their hunger and thirst. They have no acquired knowledge or no vision. Their behavior exhibits no dependence on formalities. They're unregulated. If it feels good, to feel, you know, whatever, they just do it. Extensively ignorant, they can know their desirables only by smell, and by such intelligence only can they understand what is favorable and unfavorable. Their knowledge is concerned only with eating and sleeping. Unquote. Therefore, even the most ferocious lower animals, such as tigers, can be tamed simply by regularly supplying meals and accommodations for sleeping. Only snakes cannot be tamed by such an arrangement. Text 22. O purest Vidura, of the lower animals, the cow, goat, buffalo, Krishna stag, hog, gavya animals, deer, lamb, and camel all have two hooves. The horse, mule, ass, gora, shabara bison, and wild cow all have only one hoof. Now you may hear from me about the animals who have five nails. Dog, jackal, tiger, fox, cat, rabbit, shajaru, lion, monkey, elephant. Elephants have five nails. Tortoise, alligator, gosapa, etc. All have five nails in their claws. They are known as pancha nakhas, or animals that have five nails. The heron, vulture, crane, hawk, basa, baluka, peacock, swan, sarasa, chakravaka, crow, owl, and others are the birds. Then the 9th creation the creation of the human beings, who are of one species only, and who stock their eatables in the belly, is the ninth in the rotation. In the human race, the mode of passion, very prominent. Humans are always busy in the midst of miserable life, but they think themselves happy in all respects. Purport. The human being is more passionate than the animals. And thus, the sex life of the human being is more irregular. The animals have their due time for sexual intercourse, but the human being has no regular time for such activities. Human being is endowed with a higher advanced stage of consciousness for getting relief from the existence of material miseries, but due to his ignorance, he thinks that his higher consciousness is meant for advancing in the material comforts of life. Thus, his intelligence is misused in the animal propensities, eating, sleeping, defending, mating, instead of spiritual realization. By advancing in material comforts, the human being puts himself into a more miserable condition. But, illusioned by the material energy, he always thinks himself happy, even while in the midst of misery. Prabhupada gives the example sometimes of someone goes to see somebody in the hospital, they're in traction, and you know, they have tubes, and how are you? Oh. Okay. Such misery of human life is distinct from the natural, comfortable life enjoyed even by animals. The chapter is almost finished. Text 27. Oh, good Vidura. These last three creations, and the creation of the demigods, which is the tenth creation, and it's already been discussed because they were mentioned previously, by Lord Vishnu creates the demigods that control the senses. We hear they're mentioned again. Are Vikrita creations, which are different from the previously described Prakrita, or natural creations. So, Vikrita, Brahma does. And Prakrita is what Vishnu does, or Sarga. And there's a little overlap. The overlap of the demigods. Something, because, so, Lord Vishnu has a part, Brahma has a part. It doesn't delineate it here in purport. The appearance of the Kumaras is both. And the demigods are both. Text 28-29. The creations of the demigods are... the creation of the demigods is of eight varieties. Demigods, forefathers, asuras, gandharvas, apsaras, or angels, the yakshas and rakshasas, the siddhas, charanas, and vidyadharas, the bhutas, pretas, and pishachas, and... Eight, the superhuman beings, celestial singers, etc. All are created by Brahma, the creator of the universe. Purport. As explained in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Siddhas are inhabitants of Siddha Loka, where the residents travel in space without vehicles. At their mere will, they can pass from one planet to another without difficulty. Therefore, in the upper planets, the inhabitants are far superior to the inhabitants of this planet in all matters of art, culture, and science, since they possess brains superior to those of human beings. The spirits and jinn mentioned in this connection are also counted among the demigods because they are able to perform uncommon functions not possible for man. Last verse. Now I shall describe the descendants of Manu. Because, so, Brahma puts all this together, species of life, so forth, then there has to be regulation. It's not whimsical, just create a bunch of stuff and walk away. But regulating through the laws of Manu. So Brahma creates Manu and gives his laws, and Manu is the lawgiver for mankind, but where does Manu get from Brahma, where does Brahma get from Vishnu? The creator, Brahma, as the incarnation of the passion mode of the personality of God, it creates the universal affairs with unfailing desires in every millennium by the force of the Lord's energy. He's a devotee, pure devotee, involved apparently in material affairs, but he's very clear, this is the Lord's will. And enacting the Lord's will, he's engaged in devotional service. And his devotional service is in the realm of creation. And that, you know, downstream, those of us that are created, we can also be engaged in the Lord's service. If we're clear that what we're doing is service to the Supreme Lord. Although we're, like it's saying here about Brahma, he creates the universal affairs with unfailing desires in every millennium by the force of the Lord's energy. So we may also be inclined to work in a particular way. And that's not a problem. That's swabhava, like our discussion yesterday. Vaishya karma swabhava jam, Brahma karma swabhava jam, whatever swabhava is, that's the modes of nature impelling, and those modes of nature, this is Daivi Varnashram, those modes of nature are to be engaged under the regulation of the Vedas. And that means by the guidance of qualified persons, because the Vedas are to be administered that way. The one who acts that way, that activity, if it's done for Krishna, is as liberating as the direct activities of sadhana bhakti. What I just said is a direct statement at the conclusion of Brahma Samhita. As liberating as the direct activities of bhakti, if properly joined with devotional practice and under direction of proper personalities. Our, just to say it one more time, our inclinations for work or activity. The subtext is the influence of passion. If joined properly with devotional practice and under proper guidance, the personality Godhead says to Brahma, that's not entangling. That's as liberating as the direct devotional activity. That, you know, that's a small but. But it has to be with those conditions. But we follow those conditions and it can help to liberate us. So what are we to do if we have propensities? Well, we reject those propensities that are not for Krishna's pleasure. We try to correct the tendency to do things simply for our pleasure and call it devotional service. We want to do things for Krishna. We want to do what our propensities are for Krishna and join that very carefully with devotional practice and take proper guidance. And that's the path that is being described in the Bhagavatam and in Brahma Samhita and in our Hare Krishna movement. It's not karma sannyas, give up your activity. It's not realistic. It's not the teaching. Arjuna is suggesting karma sannyas, and Krishna says, no, not karma sannyas, karma palatyag. And always think of me. Engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. And it's the always thinking of Krishna that will carry us to Krishna. And the engaging in prescribed duty for Krishna will keep us from being entangled in the fruitive mentality and the reactions to the fruitive mentality. The bondage of all of this that's being described. The real purpose of creation of Brahma will be served. We'll go back. to before Brahma begins creation. Now he's beginning creation. But going back, before he, in his morning, before he recreates from the heavenly region down, Brahma asks in his prayers, morning prayers, for three things. And one of those three things is the empowerment to give the means of release from suffering from the living entities that will take their birth in the creation that he makes. Because he knows they're going to suffer. He details it, because he's a creator. He knows what the suffering is going to be before it happens. Then he creates the suffering opportunity. But he wants the opportunity, alternatively, for them to use this properly and become proper, you know, become situated in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness. So this is part of that empowerment. So the deterrent is avidya shakti, which is, and time. Who can control time? Nobody, except Krishna. And who can control the influence of avidya shakti? It's not just like, you know, go to school and get an A in your exams and now you have knowledge. That's not the kind of vidya that's being spoken of here, or the release from avidya shakti. It's the living entity from the lower non-moving living entities, the moving living entities, the human beings, the demigods. There are degrees of avidya shakti. Darker, lighter, but still avidya shakti for the living entities that are not directing their attention fully to Krishna. So the means to direct one's attention, manmana, think of Krishna, that's the goal. Just like our regulations of bhakti. According to Nectar Devotion, there's so many, 64 regulations, the do's, and then there's some do nots. And Rupa Goswami says, there's one principle that's the objective or the goal or the purpose of all do's and do nots, all vittis. What's that one principle? Always remember Krishna. And never forget Krishna. Sarva vitti nisedhasyur. All the vittis are kinkaras, they're servants of this one principle. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. They're servants of that principle. That's the principle. And same here, all this discussion, that's the purpose behind all this discussion. That's the purpose of the Anatomy of Maya class, is to see the unseen hand of Krishna. And it's easy, or it's easier in a circumstance like this, than when we leave this circumstance of hearing nicely from the Bhagavatam, and then, you know, we go about life, and something happens, and it hurts. And we completely forget about Krishna and think about how it hurts. You know, something happens. A disease, or a loved one, or something happens. And so, how to see the unseen hand of Krishna? So maybe what is the question, and you get the what answer, it's the unseen hand of Krishna, then why? And Bhishma Dev answers that question by saying you can't understand the why. But understand that there's benevolent Lord behind the events of our lives as devotees, or those who aren't devotees. Ultimately, there's a benevolent purpose, which we may not understand as the events unfold in our life. But there's some purpose to help us come to that position of returning back to Godhead, becoming detached from that or not attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. in his loving and compassionate nature. I was thinking to read, but I don't think time permits. Borijan Prabhu, in his Under His Lotus Feet, has taken the commentaries largely of Jiva Goswami plus Prabhupada's purport and some other places and summarized. And it's really nice summaries, kind of succinct. I think I won't do that right now, and I'll just take some questions. Discussion.
Sure. I don't know if you appreciate it because you didn't want me, but there's just one of my favorite purports in the Bhagavad Gita. That Prabhupada mentions really nicely what you said about overcoming just the sentiment of knowing God is great. And I was just wondering if I could read a couple sentences from
Sure.
It's from chapter 10, verse 7. Prabhupada says, generally people know that God is great, but they do not know in detail how God is great. Here are the details. If one knows factually how God is great, then naturally he becomes a surrendered soul. And he goes on to say, these are some of the opulences of the Supreme Lord. When one is firmly convinced of them, he accepts Krishna with great faith, without any doubt, and he engages in devotional service. All this particular knowledge is required in order to increase one's interest in the loving devotional service of the Lord. One should not neglect to understand fully how great Krishna is, for by knowing the greatness of Krishna, one will be able to be fixed in sincere devotional service.
Okay, you've inspired me. I'm going to read this. This is summary starting with chapter 10, text 10 through 13. It goes back a bit. I'm reading from Under His Lotus Feet, text 10 through 13. After hearing from Maitreya about the Lord's primal creation, Sarga, and his discussion with Brahma, Vidura inquires about time, another of the Lord's potencies. Time is subtle. It cannot be observed directly of the unseen hand of the Lord. Only its effects reveal its existence. Days turn into nights, summers change into autumns, and years turn into centuries. Time is the energy of Krishna that moves the creation forward. Time is eternal and irreversible. Maitreya begins by explaining that time is the source of the interaction between the modes of nature. It is the Supreme Lord's catalyst in the material world. Catalyst. That, from my chemistry education, catalyst is like a very clear term. You got a beaker and you got it at a certain temperature and everything's fine and nothing changes, you put in a catalyst and boom, all kinds of things start to happen. That catalyst doesn't change, but it causes change. It brings about change. That's what a catalyst is. So time is Krishna's catalyst. And through time, he imposes the cycles, bigger and smaller, creation, maintenance, dissolution. Srila Prabhupada, paragraph. Srila Prabhupada defines time in terms of its functional relationship with the Supreme Lord. Quote from Prabhupada's purport. The impersonal time factor is the background of the material manifestation as the instrument of the Supreme Lord. It is the ingredient of assistance offered to material nature. No one knows where time began and where it ends. And it is time only which can keep a record of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material manifestation. The time factor is the material cause of creation. and therefore a self-expansion of the personality of Godhead. Time is considered the impersonal feature of the Lord, not to be confused with Brahman, but it's an energy. In his purport to text 12, Srila Prabhupada also indicates that time is inextricable from Maya. They are interwoven. This is the Maya anatomy. They are interwoven and separate the living entity from the Supreme Lord. Quote, this unmanifested world, the avyakta state, pradhan, is the self-same personality of God, if it appears to be something else, beyond or besides the Lord. It appears so because of its being separated from the Lord by means of kala. It is something like a tape-recorded voice of a person who is now separated from the voice. As the tape recording is situated on the tape, so the whole cosmic manifestation is situated on the material energy and appears separate by means of kala. You don't have maya without kala. Time. Next section. Time effects change in the material energy. Maitreya therefore first describes 9 varieties plus a tenth of creation and 3 types of annihilation. Scheduled universal destruction, destruction caused by the fire emanating from Anantashesha's mouth as the partial devastation, and destruction caused by our own actions and reactions. Of the 9 creations, the first 6 are categorized as sarga, for they are created directly by the Lord. Each of these creations moves from subtle to gross, gradually creating a material prison suitable for the prisoner souls to inhabit. By interacting with the material energy, the prisoners either make spiritual advancement or add to their sentence by selfishly trying to enjoy the creation. He lists the 6. And then the 6th is the darkness of ignorance. You know the last of the Chaturshloki verses? The darkness born of ignorance? Who knows that? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yog. No, it's aham agyana jam tamaha. The darkness born of ignorance. So Krishna removes, he alone can remove this avidya shakti, the darkness born of ignorance. He removes the ignorance, removes the darkness born of ignorance, and then one is in the light of the spiritual reality. Krishna reserves that right. He extends it and he can withdraw it. Then the 3 of Brahma, movable living entities, lower species of life, human beings. Of these, his 7th creation, the immovable entities, the varieties of trees and plants, are identified by beings that seek subsistence upwards. These beings, like, you know, light, and therefore there's life. They need water. Comes from upwards and goes into their roots, into their legs, the Bhagavatam says, beneath the earth. Human beings, Brahma's 9th creation, are passionate. They are characterized by their ability to stock food in their bellies, their busyness, and the perpetual condition of suffering, although they consider themselves always happy. In this tenth creation, Brahma forms the eight varieties of superior beings. So it's like, you know, there's a blueprint and he just follows the plan and does this creation. But he can't do it without the blueprint, without the ingredients, without the intelligence, without the creative impetus. So it's like, in your mark, get set, go. He's supplied everything and he's extremely qualified. The post of Brahma is so important that if there isn't someone that's extremely qualified, the Lord does it himself. He expands himself and creates, he does the sub-creation. There's another nice section where, in this conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, where Maitreya specifically says that those activities which appear by Brahma and others of such qualification to be under illusion are not under illusion, like his stealing of the calves and the cowherd boys, or his becoming attracted to his own daughter and things like that, described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. They're arrangements by the Supreme Lord for furthering the realization of Brahma, further accelerating his spiritual realization. So one shouldn't think of them as if something that we might do or an ordinary conditioned soul might do. Direct their impetus, arranged, inspired by the Supreme Lord to further the realization and further the dependence of Brahma upon the Lord. Okay, end of chapter. The next one isn't easier. Calculation of time by the atom, that's the next chapter. So it's like, he asked about time, so he's getting it. Like, you know, now it goes to micro. First it was big cycles, the Lord's creation. Then it was Brahma's creation. And then, you know, living entities' creation. And then, like, atoms moving as the unit of time. It's amazing, Bhagavatam. Yes?
I have a question regarding the verse 29, in which demigods, under demigods, even demons and
yes.
Buddhas are mentioned.
Yes. Prabhupada explains in the purport, they're included there because, just one reason, not their elevated consciousness, but they have capacities that are supernatural, beyond the capacity of human beings, and for that reason only they're included in that category. Yes?
I don't know how to put this because our language is so structured, assuming that time is and so on, but bear with me. Does time go on between one life of Brahma and the next life of Brahma?
Sure. Time is eternal. It's experienced differently according to differences of embodiment.
Who experiences it?
The soul. The seat of consciousness is the soul. So, I was having this discussion in Los Angeles with a physician who his field is pain management. It's like people that they tried everything and it doesn't work and they just want relief from the pain. So that's what he does. He does the procedures and his partner's the anesthesiologist. And the nature of anesthesia is, we were discussing this, that you don't have any sense of passage of time. I was sharing this with him. There's, you know, Prithvi Shrava Prabhu had some tumor growth and under his chin, and you could see it, and he
couldn't speak like this because it was,
he couldn't speak properly. So he had his tried many anyway, a few years of trying to like do a natural thing, and finally he had to have the tumor removed. Pritishrava described to me that at first his wife described this to me, that he was under anesthesia for some number of hours, and as he was becoming awake, some fluids had caught in his throat, he was coughing, so they had to anesthetize him again. So it was like something like a day and a half. Something like that. Maybe it was less, but something like that. And when he came out of anesthesia, it was like no time had passed. It's not like sleep. When you sleep, there's like, go to sleep, and there's some sense of, oh, now it's morning, time to wake up, or something. There's no sense of passage of time. And this doctor said to me, exactly, I have many examples of situations where patients, and she said just yesterday, was in surgery all day long, and the person, when they came out of anesthesia, said, doctor, when are you going to put, you know, when are you going to do this procedure? And I had an experience like that, some colonoscopy, something that older people are supposed to do periodically. And so I went, this was just like in January or something. So I went for the procedure, and, you know, it takes forever because they do all these exams and blah, blah, blah. I'm lying down. They changed the IV tube from whatever it was to whatever, you know, to the anesthesia. And then I don't remember blacking out. I remember, waking up and looking around the room and saying, when are they going to take me away and do the procedure? Then I looked at the clock on the wall, and it was an hour and a half later. Like, no sense of time. So, your question was, who is the one that's experiencing time? It's the soul. But they're different states of consciousness. And susupti, this one, is like the soul that's, it's likened to the state of consciousness of the soul that's within the body of Mahavishnu during not just the night of Brahma, but the end of the life of Brahma. Okay, so the sense of passage of time, nothing. And Brahma creates, and Prabhupada describes, it's like when we wake up in the morning, oh, I'm Mr. So-and-so, and I do these things, and you go about your business. And that's like what he's making a comparison from one day, and then night, and then the next day. We just, like, go about our business. Some sense of identity of who we are. But it's all illusion. And the time energy is dormant, not acting upon the modes of nature and the living entity, covering the living entity by all these different neat ways of covering living entities, give them all stuff and creative intelligence and material desires and, you know, whoop-de-doo, material life. But it's all dormant, like under anesthesia. Same. And then creation, time, energy, stuff, experiencing time, relative, but it's actually absolute. So when in the state of Krishna consciousness, you know, that when that wonderful day comes, we'll have some sense of what eternal time is. But right now, we don't. Oh, at least it's forgotten. We have a sense of this other kind, Maya. It's the modes of nature mixing with stuff and time. Time is eternal. The background, time is eternal. And then there's the movement of time, moving matter into, from an unmanifest to a manifest to an unmanifest. Eternal time is unchanging. It appears differently according to the periods of the cycle, the big one, the medium one, the little small ones, the little baby ones, and the micro ones. But in all those circumstances, the background is eternal time. And knowledge and ignorance and activity are all influenced by time acting with the modes of nature. So during the night, at the end of Brahma's day, all living entities are wound back in the body of Mahavishnu. It's like anesthesia. The individuality is suspended. Consciousness isn't zero, it's just in that susupti state. And that's what night is. That's what the end of Brahma's life is. For equal duration as his life. It's just cycles of time. And the background is eternal time. So, the impetus is go to eternal time. Go to Krishna. And then in the interim, it's different cycles. During that end of Brahma's life, time is still there. Eternal time is still there. Okay? You know, whatever that is, eternal time. And when the time for creation comes again, the exhalation of the Lord, time energy moves matter. And the modes of nature start to mix, and so forth. That's the subject matter that's being spoken about here. You know, big cycles, medium cycles, smaller cycles, micro cycles. Time is cyclical. And behind it is eternal. Yes?
Well, between you have described just now in your discussion that during the state of anesthesia, or when there is no consciousness, modes of nature are not active. Right?
Well, diminished, not zero. Diminished, but like in anesthesia, or consciousness isn't zero. We don't have the conscious awareness of time, but you know, time has passed.
The soul is not experiencing those moments.
Yes. We're not consciously aware of. Consciousness is covered to the degree that we're not consciously aware of. But let's say if we're in the human form of life, we're anesthetized. Consciousness is not aware of, but things are happening because time is acting. The doctors are performing their surgery.
So at that point, if the soul leaves the body, what is it going to be, the state of the soul?
Not ideal. What isn't thinking of Krishna? What isn't thinking? Not ideal. So something that Prabhupada said was he had heart attacks and he was taken to the Jersey Shore for recovery from his heart attacks, and he said, whatever you do, don't, like, you know, emphatically, don't do what happened. I went to visit one of my god brothers, Prabhupada said, and he had all these tubes and he was like a vegetable. If he died in that condition, how awful. Don't let them do that to me. The doctors may insist. I will not permit, if you know, they force, I'll walk out of the hospital. Don't do that. And that's, you know, Prabhupada left in that state. Where it wasn't, you know, no tubes, no, you know. His body was an enormous amount of pain. But he was transcending that pain by Krishna consciousness. So, what our capacity is one thing, what his capacity is another thing. But your question was, what happens if the soul leaves the body in that condition? It's, you know, whatever, yum yum vapi smaran bhavam jajantante kalevara. What is one thinking of in such a state? Nothing. Vegetable. Yeah?
Just, you know, when we're, as a nurse caring for patients, nowadays they want people on comfort care when they're dying. They're not going to go the route of the artificial tubes. But included in the comfort care, you're giving them a lot of sedation so that they're very restful and peaceful of caring. But, you know, they're not so conscious of that.
Don't.
You know, so they're promoting that. But other times, if you don't give these medications to people, sometimes they're so disturbed and
thrashing
and restless that state is, you know, I'm just wondering, I guess I'm just thinking about that, just how our society is, like, promoting like that.
Painless.
Like, painless, peaceful, and people, you know, I mean, death isn't always a very peaceful state for many people.
Yeah. In contrast, I haven't been intimately involved with situations where devotees, you know, hospice care for devotees, but many describe those moments, hours and moments just prior to passing, the devotee is very peaceful, without sedation, just like, you know, Krishna's energy is working. They're under Krishna's protection. Different. Someone else? Yes?
Two questions, Maharaj. We'll get into time. One is, I remember reading that, you know, how the demigods, their time frame is different.
Yes.
Like 6 months is one day.
Yeah.
That's according to the movements of the sun in the Vedic Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So when they come here, are they affected with time as we're affected with time?
Apparently, and I would say that on the basis that... No, excuse me. Apparently not, because when living entities like King Indradumna that went to Brahmaloka to get Brahma to come perform the installation of Lord Jagannath, Brahma was on Brahma's time, and Indradumna was on earthly time because of his material, because of his embodiment. And so many yugas had passed by the time they came back.
But that would indicate, though, that...
Right, so but conversely, if the demigods come, they're on demigod time because of their embodiment and their elevated state of consciousness, both. Time is affecting them differently. It's like, let's say, Prabhupada speaks of, I forget the name of the insect, but its life cycle is 24 hours. So we're side by side with the living entity whose life cycle is 24 hours. So they do all the things that a living entity does in 24 hours, and that's their 100 years. So it's embodiment that determines the effect of time.
The second question. Some of the pastimes we read about in Bhagavatam don't take place on this planet. For instance, I remember hearing that, like, Lord Nishimdev's whole thing that was up.
Indraloka.
So when we celebrate every year on the same day, Nishimdev's appearance, how would that correlate? Because it wasn't happening every, you know, it wasn't the same.
It's a little abstract for me to be able to answer. You know, on demigod time and earth time, and, you know, earth time this week when we celebrate on earth time, because that's our time.
So I'm just wondering if their seasons match up like ours.
Because, you know. So we're going by lunar calendar. And it's not, and our time cycles are solar and lunar combined, and the phases of the moon during different months by lunar calendar. So how does that correlate? It seems to be what your question is, to, you know, time and the heavenly planets.
Like, how do they calculate Nishimi Devas
on that? I just understand your question. The answer is, I don't know. I'm not an astrologer, astronomer. You know, I don't know how the math would work. They probably have a Nisringa festival, but it may not be Nisringa Chaturdasi. Yes?
In the spiritual, there's no concept of time, right?
There's the concept of eternal time. Time, as we know it, is conspicuous by its absence, but there is certainly a sense of, in Krishna's pastimes, there are Ashta Kaliya Leela, according to the times when Krishna performs his pastimes. There's morning and there's night, and there's seasons. Yes. But it's not time as we know it. Correct?
I'm trying to understand how, I'm trying to visualize how it would...
Trying to interpolate between our experience of time and the spiritual world's experience of time, good luck. It's different. Just like in the spiritual world, there's no demons. But there's a sense of demons. And they, you know, take intense shelter of Krishna. Some demon is coming, some demon is coming. There's no demons. It's the spiritual world. And similarly, there's no time. But there's a sense of time. It's Yogamaya potency, it's not the Mahamaya potency.
That raises another question, right? So is it like... spiritual souls in the spiritual world, if they wanted, so their pastimes and everything, they ascribe to a certain time and season, or is it like, can people,
whatever Krishna wants, that's what happens.
Okay. It's not what they want.
Whatever Krishna wants. And Krishna's, he's an expert enjoyer. And variety is the mother of enjoyment. So there's this, there's that, there's so many things, according to Krishna's desire to enjoy. And living entities are assisting Krishna in enjoyment. And they're very happy to do that.
And they don't have any desires?
They have desire for Krishna's enjoyment. To correspond with Krishna's enjoyment, they have desires.
That's probably the only...
That's the position of the spiritual world. They love... What's the position of love? The happiness of the beloved. Is there something else? There's nothing else. Do they have desires? You bet. The happiness of the beloved. Prahlad Maharaj says that in his prayers to Lord Nisringadeva. He's anticipating, actually Lord Nisringadeva, at one point he's anticipating Lord Nisringadeva is going to ask him to take a benediction. Finally, Lord Nisringadeva says, take a benediction. And he replies, our relationship is, you're the master and I'm the servant. And there's nothing else between us. There's no question of, I want something. I want... You're the master. I want what you want. That's our relationship and there's nothing else. Do they have desires? They have desires. Inspired by Krishna. And the range of desires is unlimited because Krishna's capacity for enjoying is unlimited. And they're desiring according to the inspiration or impetus for Krishna's happiness out of love. That's the oneness of the spiritual world. Oneness and variegatedness. Contemplate that for a while. Yes.
Thank you. I know we called this conversation I had with someone. Something along the lines of material time is... It's subject because there's deterioration. Things are changing. If things never changed or never deteriorated, would there be a sense of material time? Like, you see a child is growing or whatever, you can see that there's a change. But if they always stayed the same, would there be a sense of time passing? I don't know if it's kind of ties in with the honest.
Yeah, it's the reverse way of saying it, the way that the Bhagavatam says it. This description is from the perspective of the perceiver of time, we see the presence of time through change. And it's time that's making change. We can't see time, but we can see the presence of time through change. And if there's no change, how is there the sense of time?
So in the spiritual world,
it's different.
Deterioration.
There's different. It's another set of rules. You can't apply these rules to the spiritual world. There's a sense of time, but it's not like we know time. There's events, but not like we know events. And it's inconceivable, achintya, from our perspective. But liberated souls, it's not a problem. it's a cascading series of ecstasies called love. They're not bothered with it. Hey, what's going on? What time is it? That's what Maitreya says, and Prabhupada repeats it twice in that same purport.
So does it maintain its impersonal aspect?
No, it's different than the Brahman aspect. It's impersonal in the sense that it's an instrument of Krishna. So, supposing I had a stick, and on the end of the stick was a glove, and I said, you know, let's shake hands. The stick and the glove, it's not personal. Behind the instrument is a person. So time, as we know it, is impersonal. But behind the impersonal is person. In that sense, it's like, you know this from your position as a researcher, that the laws of nature are blind or impersonal. Like, you know, random events and cause and effect events. The laws of nature, they're impersonal. But behind the impersonal, there's person. Time is impersonal. It doesn't consider, oh, it's a little child. I won't do this because it's a little child. Here's an adult. So it acts the same for everybody. You know, time keeps moving. It doesn't make differentiations. Other than, you know, our position of consciousness, and then time will act differently. Just like, you know, when we're bored, or you're waiting for somebody, something to happen, the bus to come, or somebody who's late, or something like that. How long does it take? You're sitting waiting for the train in India to come, and it takes forever. But if you're totally absorbed, time just flies. And it's one person. Time acts differently according to our consciousness. But time is impersonal. Consciousness, it's a relationship with Krishna, actually. And we just tune into the Krishna channel, and that's another sense of time altogether. Yes.
Does each time go on forever into the past and the future?
Can you turn the volume up a little bit?
Eternal time. Does it go on forever into the past and the future?
Well, that's what eternal means. No beginning, no end. Alpha and Omega, right? No beginning, no end. Oh.
Difficult to get one's thoughts around.
Huh?
It's difficult to get my thoughts around that.
And then there's Krishna, who is the source of Kala Shakti. Okay. Thank you all very much. Jin Prabhupada, Jin Jai.
Jai. Jai.